This is Wolf's Campfire, and you're about to listen to Three Scary Security Guard Stories, Volume 2. You can also check me out on YouTube at youtube.com/wolfscampfire. Now with that said, whether you're sitting around a campfire, on the night shift, or even laying in bed, let my voice soothe your nightmares. I'm a security guard of an empty warehouse, written by Secret Amish. I'm not gonna get into how I got this job. Suffice to say, a friend of a friend. I never even met my own boss. I got a phone call saying I was hired, and to get my paycheck directly deposited every 2 weeks. It's pretty good pay, too, so I'm not going to dig too much into it. But the warehouse, it's strange, man. It's on a hill at the edge of town, overlooking it. There's a small entrance on the side of the building that's locked with a combination that only I know. And I'm just supposed to come by every night to take a look inside. Make sure no teens are drinking in there. Some stupid shit like that. There's something wrong with that building, though. First off, it's much larger than it looks. And, well, lit inside. Too well lit. Inside the warehouse, there's light coming from somewhere, but I can't really tell where. The ceiling is so high up, I can't see the top, even though you can tell there's a roof from the outside. And there's no windows. It's just endless white walls. I feel like I'm a cartoon character drawn into an empty piece of paper whenever I'm inside it. And it's entirely empty, too. What the hell am I guarding it for? I made the mistake once of trying to find out how big the building was. I would follow the walls and try to reach one of the four corners. And I swear to God, I walked for days and never reached it. I had to turn around and try to find the door I came in through. Thank God I was walking along the walls. It's weird, because my phone clock bugs out whenever I'm inside and stops working. It also has no signal. But that might be because I'm in the middle of nowhere. When I got outside again, my phone's clock would work again, and I'd later find out that I was inside the warehouse for less than an hour. But I could swear I was walking for what felt like weeks. I talked to my friends about this, and they all said that it was because I was high. And I'll admit it, sometimes I have an edible right before my shift starts. But get this, while I was inside, I never got hungry, never got thirsty, and never got the urge to pee, no matter how long I spent in there. I would walk further and further out every night, and when I came out, it's the same. I was inside for less than an hour. I didn't even know if I was making progress, but eventually, I reached one of the corners. I tried keeping track of how many steps it took to reach the corner, and the closest estimate I could get to is about 52,800,000,000. I looked it up on Google, and that's about the distance if you walked from the sun to the edge of the solar system. It should have taken me millions of years to walk that distance, but when I turned around and got back outside, less than an hour had passed yet again. I would venture in again and again, night after night, moving along the walls trying to find the corners of the warehouse. This white-walled nightmare, where the light was coming from everywhere, yet nowhere. And I would eventually do it. I would reach all four corners and then follow the wall back to the entrance of the warehouse. I estimated the size of the room to be roughly square-shaped, large enough to house two solar systems. And that doesn't even cover how tall the building space must be, since I can't even see the ceiling. Sounds crazy, right? Clearly, the edibles were tainted with some other stuff. Well, after a month of just hugging the wall and walking in circles, I decided to walk to the center of the room. The warehouse was roughly square, so I had some idea where the center of the warehouse was. My biggest concern was getting lost and not being able to get back out. I knew if I could find a wall, I could just follow it and eventually find the exit. But people who got lost in deserts and forests unconsciously started wandering in circles, and in a space as large as two solar systems, That seems like a real possibility. But I got an advantage. I don't get hungry or thirsty inside there, and I seem to have infinite time. So, there's a good chance I'll make it to a wall, eventually. And that's what I've been doing for the past year. For the first couple of weeks, I would get lost. But when you have infinite time and infinite chances, well, it's only a matter of time before I got out again. Afterwards, I would even leave little road markers, some gum wrappers, empty soda cans, a can of paint that I splashed on the floor. I was amazed how I was able to find these markers consistently, considering there were billions of miles apart. And eventually, I was able to make it across the room from one side to the other without needing to hug the wall, and eventually, I found it. I didn't even know I was looking for anything, but it was a warehouse, right? It was right at the center of the warehouse, or close to it, I can't really tell, and the first time I saw it from a distance, I thought it was a marker I left behind. But as I got closer, it grew and grew until it was unmistakable. I stopped. There was a person there. A man. He was wearing a gray suit and brown pointed shoes with his back to me. There was a crunching sound as if he was eating something. Maybe an apple? But his arms were at his side. So, how was he holding anything to his mouth? There was something wrong with him. I couldn't put my finger on it until he started moving towards me. His feet. His brown shoes. I was looking at the back of his head, but his shoes were pointing towards me. His knees and legs and feet were backwards. As he shuffled in my direction, his neck began turning as to face me. Something told me not to look into its face as I turned and ran. A horrible wail escaped from the creature. I didn't look back. I did eventually make it out, though. I don't know when it stopped chasing me, but it seems that it doesn't like to leave that spot. I quit my job the next day. Well, not exactly. I couldn't get in contact with my boss, but I didn't go back to the warehouse again. The checks keep coming, though. But you know what the strangest thing about all this is? I was getting ready for a job interview, because I'm not going back to that place, and I was going through my closet. Inside was a suit I haven't worn in ages. It was gray, with brown pointed shoes. I'm a lab security guard, and one of the technicians has done something unforgivable. Written by Head of Spectra. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna get sued over this, and right now, I really don't care anymore. This shit I've seen by now is so screwed up. Most of you people aren't even going to believe me. But this needs to get out, no matter what the cost. I work, or, well, worked, for a very big research company, and no, I'm not a scientist. I'm a security guard. Honestly, I'm barely above minimum wage, and I had to sign a crapload of NDAs, even though, for the most part, I have no idea what's going on at the company I work for. I only knew that they were into pharmaceuticals, researching new drugs and cures and all that, and hey, that's pretty neat. They were trying to save the world. A lot of respect for that. My job was to guard the door. Anyone comes in, they need to have a valid badge and gets cleared by me. I've never had a problem with it, and very few people have ever given me any trouble. In hindsight, the very first inkling I got over was going on when I overheard a few of the eggheads chattering as they left the lab for lunch one afternoon. I caught a few snippets of the conversation like, returning cognitive function, and reversible brain death, which all sounded pretty cool. I mean, I read somewhere that someone else returned some brain function to a dead pig, and I got to wondering if these folks were doing something similar. I mean, that would be pretty cool, right? I got to think about the wonders of modern science and dazzle at what the future held for medical advancements for a little bit, provided a bunch of middle-aged suburban moms didn't get in the way. That was a good feeling. I didn't hear much about whatever project they were working on after that. I mean, that's fine. The eggheads were supposed to keep work at work and not let it out. Can't have the competition hearing about it. or having things leak. I mostly forgot about that snippet of a conversation I'd heard and went back to spending my days checking badges and scrolling social media when I wasn't busy. Then came Brian. Brian Mendelson and I had never talked much. He was a mid-tier level employee who had a weekday shift that ended at 7. He was portly, balding, and kinda resembled the sick love child between Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito. He'd been working at the lab for as long as I'd been there, so I didn't think much of him. He was just another passing face that I never spoke to. He sure as hell never acted suspicious. When he left one night, a little early, with a stiffer posture than I remembered, and a briefcase I didn't remember seeing him with before, I didn't think too much of it. I noticed that was my job after all. But I didn't say anything to him. He looked at me expectantly as he got halfway to the parking lot, and I awkwardly waved at him. Brian awkwardly waved back before he got into his car and drove off. The next morning, I got called into the office to get screamed at by my boss. Someone had stolen some samples from one of the labs. There was no evidence of a break-in, so the conclusion was that it had to be one of the people with clearance. A good old-fashioned case of industrial espionage. Well, there was only one guy I could think of who'd been acting suspicious, and that was Brian. I told them that too. I don't know the details of what happened next. I know that they looked into him, but they didn't find anything. I wasn't fired, since there was no way to prove the theft happened on my watch, or that the theft had been easily visible. I was, however, told to inspect all bags upon exit to ensure no one was smuggling anything out. I targeted Brian first, of course. He'd been the obvious suspect. So, naturally, I wanted to make sure he wasn't pulling some kind of con, stealing samples and selling them for a bit of side money. Over the next week, though, nothing happened. No one tried anything, and I went back to my usual life. I watched the news on my phone in between browsing Reddit, and I remember there had been some controversy over a local funeral home misplacing the body of a college student who'd hung herself. Damn shame. She'd been a beauty, too. A cute girl by the name of Taylor Jones. Always a shame when a cute girl dies. Brian avoided eye contact as I checked his bag a few nights later. He seemed distracted and kept looking at his phone. He'd emptied out his pockets for me as instructed, and I didn't really find anything out of the ordinary, and he didn't speak either. "All right, you have a nice night," I said, nodding at him. He nodded back and left abruptly. Sure enough, the next morning, there was another break-in. A vial of something had been stolen, and I had proof that I'd checked everyone's bags. The security camera footage showed me doing it. So, as pissed off as the head honchos were, there wasn't jack shit they could do about it. I was doing my job, and they knew it. Even if I wasn't in trouble, though, I was a little concerned about how someone had managed to sneak past me. I mean, sure, there were ways to do it. Brian could have taped the vial to his body, under his clothes. He could have put it in his mouth or up his butt. Like I said, I do recall him not speaking at all to me, and I chalked it up to just plain rudeness. I say Brian, because I had a sneaking suspicion that it was him behind all of this. Just a feeling in my gut. I couldn't prove it, but he'd seemed so much shiftier lately. This set up a whole string of debates about just how far they could search their employees to see if they were hiding anything. Did we really need to go so far as to do a cavity search on our own employees? Was that actually necessary? I got to thinking about it, and I didn't really want it to go that far. Plus, the more I stewed on it, the more pissed off I got. Here I was working my ass off for barely minimum wage, and some person, already making more than I would ever make, was stealing their own work to sell and make even more money. Now, that pissed me off, and it's what got me really thinking. What was Brian even up to, assuming it was even him? He hadn't stopped acting suspicious. He always seemed to leave early, and hurried to his car after work. He couldn't have acted more guilty if he'd tried. I got into my mind to do my own little investigation. I took a night off, and when quitting time came, I waited in my own car down the street for Brian to leave work. Sure enough, a minute or so before 7, Brian's car pulled out of the lot and he started driving. I followed at enough a distance so he wouldn't get suspicious. I didn't want to spook him. Brian drove until he was well out of town, and I started to wonder if I was just following him home. I mean, this was a gross invasion of privacy, and I was starting to have my doubts. He eventually got off the highway and pulled into a motel a good hour away from where we worked. Jesus, did he live here? I parked on the street and watched him from a distance as he got out of his car and went to talk to the motel clerk. Through the windows, I saw the clerk give him a key and smile at him. It didn't look like Brian paid anything. Brian walked out of the office and to a nearby motel door, where he went inside and closed it behind him. Had I just watched this guy go to a booty call? I left and stewed on it for a day or so. Brian's behavior hadn't really changed at all over the next few days. On my next day off, I followed him to the motel again. This time, after he went into his room, I opted to go into the office and have a chat with the clerk. The guy behind the desk was a weaselly-looking bastard with a toque who stank of cigarette smoke. "We're full up," he said gruffly. "Nothing at all, eh?" I asked. "I said we're full. Sorry, you're gonna have to go elsewhere." He didn't stand up. He just watched me, waiting for me to leave, and I didn't really try to engage this guy in any further conversation. I didn't leave just yet, though. I walked past the rooms, listening closely. There wasn't much sound at all. It was quiet. No voices, no TV, nothing. I stopped by one of the darkened motel room windows and peered inside cautiously. This looked empty, even though the clerk said they were full. Come to think of it, I hadn't seen any cars outside, save for Brian's and two others. The motel looked like it had way more capacity than that. Then, I saw movement in the bedroom. Someone was clearly walking around in there. I had no idea, and I knocked on the door. "Housekeeping," I said in my best customer service voice. No response. Frowning, I tried the door. Locked. I tried something else. Now, I know that my job is technically security, but I didn't have the best upbringing. I may or may not have been a wild child, and doing that taught me a number of things, including how to pick a lock. The door came open easily once I picked it, and when I looked inside, I could see the figures of a person standing in the darkness. "Oh shit, sorry, I didn't know anyone was in there," I said. Still no sound. "Hello?" I reached for the light switch and turned it on. The woman standing in the room was blonde, beautiful, and naked as the day she was born. She stared at me with a vacant expression, and I slowly drew closer to her. "Oh shit, ma'am, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were..." She just stood there, not trying to hide herself. It was like there was no one even home. She just stood there. "Ma'am?" I took a step closer, and as I studied her face, I realized I knew her from somewhere. Looking closer, the bruises on her neck helped it all click into place. This was the girl I'd seen on the news, the one who'd hung herself. The one whose body had gone missing, Taylor Jones. For the longest time, I just stared. I mean, what the hell else was I going to do? I tried to reason away with what I was seeing. I mean, there's gotta be tons of cute blonde chicks around, right? Especially ones with ligature marks who stand naked in motel rooms in the dark and don't move. I had to get her out of there. I mean, she was clearly drugged up or something, right? I took her by the hand and she went along with me, with absolutely no resistance. I caught a glimpse of the bed and saw an open box of condoms on the table beside her. It turned my stomach to imagine what they were doing in here. I just made it through the door when someone clotheslined me with a baseball bat. I hit the ground hard and without anything even remotely resembling dignity, my ears were ringing and I saw stars. Now, you gotta pay for that. I recognized the hostile drawl of the motel clerk as I writhed on the ground. I saw him gently push Taylor back into the room
before he stepped in as well. He grabbed me by the back of my shirt and dragged me into the room with him. "Now, this is an unfortunate predicament we're in," the clerk said. He guided Taylor towards a nearby chair and made her sit.
"What the hell did you do to her?"
I murmured as the clerk sat down on the bed.
"Do to her? Not a damn thing. If anything, she did it to herself."
"You faked her death and brought her here?" I replied. "I saw her on the news."
"Faked it?" the clerk scoffed. "I think you've got it all wrong."
I got to my knees and looked over at Taylor in her chair. She didn't move, didn't react to us at all. The door opened, and I saw Brian coming in. His shirt was untucked, and the concern on his face grew when he saw me.
"What the hell? You know him?" the clerk asked, pointing the baseball bat at me.
"Yeah, he's the security guy at the lab." Brian frowned. "Jeb, how'd he get here?"
"Caught him poking around this room,"
the clerk, Jeb, replied. "Looks like he found our hanging girl here."
"Jesus, I knew you shouldn't have gotten her. She was too high profile."
Brian swore under his breath, never once taking his eyes off me.
"Hey, you didn't have any complaints when you were plugging her a couple of days ago,"
Jeb snapped. "And this whole operation was your idea, so don't you dare shift the blame onto me."
"Well, you're the one choosing the girls,"
Brian replied, his temper rising. He stopped and rubbed his temples.
"We need to handle this," he said, and Jeb nodded, looking over at me.
"What the hell are you two doing here?"
I asked.
"The hell did you do to that girl?"
"We didn't do anything," Brian said. "I mean, we didn't kill her at least. She was already dead."
The look on my face made it clear that I had no idea what he was talking about. So, Brian elaborated.
"I assume you came because you were looking for the missing vials. Or at least you were wondering if I was selling them or something, right?"
I didn't answer, and he didn't bother waiting for me to.
"I don't suppose you know what was in those vials, do you? You probably don't even know what we do in that lab."
"Nothing as screwed up as this," I replied. Brian grimaced. "We developed a mixture of chemicals that can stimulate a dead brain, restart a body, as it were. In effect, we can bring people back to life by simply giving them a little needle right behind the eye. They're a little wary about doing human trials at the lab just yet, so I asked Jeb here if he'd let me experiment, and needed to see if it worked."
"Why? So you could screw him?"
I asked. Brian pursed his lips.
"That wasn't the original plan," he admitted. "The subjects regain low-level cognitive functions, but they lose just about all higher brain functions. They're alive, but they're basically vegetables. I didn't really have much to do with my first few subjects, and Jeb's business mostly consists of prostitutes. So, we made a little arrangement, provided some in-house services, as it were. I provide him bodies, and he split the income with me."
I stared at him in horror.
"You've been pimping out dead girls?"
"Why the hell not?" Jeb asked.
"Hot pieces of ass that won't say no, and doesn't need a cut? I've never had so much business."
"The serum works,"
Brian insisted,
"even if we get a little sidetracked."
"You're insane! You're both frickin' insane!"
That was the only thing I could think to say, and Brian just sighed. "And you're the result of my carelessness." He looked over at Jeb. "Don't make too much of a mess. I'm sure we can frame it as a car accident or something." Jeb just smiled and nodded, before raising the baseball bat. I wondered if he was expecting me to die easily, but I had no intentions of going out like that. He hit me again with the bat, and I went down, all part of the plan. I kicked him in the knee as hard as I could and heard it crack. Jeb went down and I saw the bat slip out of his hands.
"God damn it!"
Brian went for the bat, but so did I. He made it there first, since he was walking and I was crawling. He raised it above his head as I hurried towards him, getting on my feet again. I tackled him before he could hit me and slammed him into the wall of the motel. I tried to rip the bat from his grip. Jeb was on his feet again, and he grabbed me from behind, struggling to pull me off Brian. The bat weakly bopped against my head,
and I slammed my head backwards to hit Jeb in the face. I could feel his nose crunch. I resumed my attack on Brian, punching him in the face over and over again. I felt his glasses break beneath my fist, and Jeb tried to pull me off. This time, he succeeded, but not before I ripped the bat away from Brian. Jeb pushed me away, and his eyes widened when he saw I had the bat. I swung it at his face as hard as I could, and he went down. And I kept swinging until I was sure he wasn't ever going to get back up. His corpse twitched on the floor, and I could see Brian watching from the corner of my eye. Jesus Christ. He blindly scrambled towards the door, hoping to escape, but I was faster. I seized him by the coat and threw him to the ground. No, no, wait, don't! I didn't care. I raised the bat, and I didn't stop hitting him until his head was nothing but a thick red paste. Covered in blood and exhausted, I sat down on the bed, panting heavily and looking at Taylor. She'd sat there throughout the violence, never once moving. She didn't even react to the corpses, and honestly, that was fine. I stared at her sadly, and after resting, I decided I had to look at the other rooms. There were 17 girls in that motel, including Taylor. I didn't recognize all of them, but I'm pretty sure they all didn't die by their own means. 17 girls Brian had brought back to life, just so Jeb could run his little brothel. God, it made me sick. How many had he murdered? That was the question at the forefront of my mind. All of them? Most of them? And only one who could give me the answer was dead. And there was no way to bring him back. Even with the serum, there wasn't a brain left to revive. Not that I would have, even if I'd wanted to. I burned the motel to the ground, and I made sure all the girls were right there in the middle of the fire when I did it. Better that they just die again than whatever else would have happened to them. If I had called the lab and told them what had happened, I didn't know for sure they'd let those girls just stay dead. After Brian, I didn't want to risk trusting them again. I'm signing off now, and then I'm probably gonna get sued. But I really don't care. Whatever those people in the lab are working on, it's not worth it. No matter what they do with it, there will always be more Brians and Jebs to exploit it, and I'll be damned if I'm ever going to let that happen again.
I am a security guard at an abandoned apartment, written by Glum Silence.
I had been looking for a part-time job for some time, and I came across this seemingly normal job. So, as usual, I was browsing through the local newspaper, hoping to find something that could move me, and as I flipped pages and scanned every nook and cranny of the recruitment section, I came across a recruitment offer. Apparently, they were looking for a nighttime security guard. Hiring a full-time security guard is normal for all apartments, and even more so for the newly constructed ones. But the thing that struck me as odd was that this particular set of six-story apartments was located on an isolated location on the outskirts of the city. What was more odd was that these set of apartments were over 100 years old. I might as well guard an ancient tomb at this point. But then again, human greed triumphed over my nerd logic, and I decided to take up on the job. I dialed the given number, and an old gruff voice came from the other end.
You here for the job?
Yes.
Listen, young man. This job is very easy if you know how to stick to my one simple rule. But once you break it...
He left the sentence hanging there. It's official, I thought. This old man was a psycho.
I won't break any rule, sir.
I replied.
There is only one rule here, kid. Nothing comes in, and nothing goes out.
But isn't this a part...
New rule. Don't ask any questions.
At this point, I was thinking if I should cut the call and look for another job. But then, I thought giving it a try might not be a bad thing after all. So, long story short, I agreed to take up the job. I drove my bike and sat down in the little adobe provided to me outside the apartment gate. It was around 10 p.m. when I came here, and so I decided to see a movie until 12 p.m. As I watched two bodies about go down on each other, I heard a thud. I turned to my watch and saw that it was 11:30 p.m. again. I heard a thud. It sounded like someone was banging at a window. Standing up, I took up my baton and went outside. And what I saw next sent chills down my spine. I saw a girl at the window of the 6th floor banging her head at the window of the balcony. I couldn't see her face because it was covered by her black hair, but as I looked closely, I could see a hand holding her head and banging her head. My first instinct was to open the gates and rush in to save the girl, but before I could go in, I saw a man, an old man to be precise, dressed in a classic suit and wearing an old fedora looking at me. He was just standing outside at the gate and looking at me, and in an old familiar gruff voice he said, "Remember!" I fainted that night, and the next morning, my first thought was to quit my job. But then, I remembered now how the old man had entrusted this job to me. But even as I sit here, trying to dial a number that went offline years ago, I cannot comprehend why did that old man give me this job, and more importantly, who will pay me?